W-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
So she wanted me dropped off at school. She wanted me dropped off like half a block away so she can walk.
It's her name is Sting. She's in the face.
But he dropped her off half a block away and drove away.
Okay. Did she ever go to school though?
No, we called school.
She was walking in that direction. She was rifling through her backpack, just looking for something. I thought maybe she was just looking for headphones before she got her walking on.
Yeah.
But she was just kind of, you know, shambling over in that direction. It looked the same as any other morning.
I got confirmation from the school that she never made it. They sent me an email saying she didn't make it. Mm-hmm. But I also spoke to her or emailed one of her teachers directly. And looked at all her attendance for all her periods and told me she didn't make it at all today.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. So let's talk about Maddie Soto, Madeline Soto. She was 13 when this happens. And what is really excruciating is that she had literally just celebrated her 13th birthday. So that was on the 25th of the 2nd, 2024. So basically a few months ago, she was turning 13. Now for a lot of kids out there, 13 is symbolic of something enormous. It's a coming of age. You become a teenager. You suddenly feel like you're older than you were before. And even though it literally is hours between you being 12 and 13, psychologically, you feel like it gives a message to those around you that you're not a kid anymore. And inevitably, you are a kid. But you feel differently. And it can be so exciting knowing that you are going to be 13. And Madeline had a relative who put a party on for her. It's really intriguing and also slightly disturbing to me that for her 13th birthday, lots of wider family came to celebrate with her, but her own mother, Jen Soto, did not. Now everyone can say, well, you know what, work schedules are work schedules. And at the end of the day, people have got to make money. They've got to be able to bring in the economy so that the family can eat. And I get it, but I'm telling you now, come hell or high water, I would be at my child's 13th birthday, particularly if my wider family were putting that birthday party on. And the reason for that is simple. It's the message that I'm giving to my child. You know, for a whole year before they're 13, they're going to turn 13, so you've got a lot of planning time that you can essentially inform your employer of. And if you've got a new job, which she had, Jen Soto had moved into a new job recently, you tell your employer of any days that are going to cause an absence for you at the beginning of that job process. That's how it works. But Jen Soto obviously did not get the memo on, I don't know, being a connected parent. And I am going to be a little bit like this with respect. It's very rare that I call into account victims in this case. And until Jen Soto is considered a perpetrator in this case, she is still a victim. She's lost a child. But I do question why she was not at that party, because there is an indelible line we expect, a thread that connects parents and children. And like I said, for these big events, it's important that you're present. Also, it turned out that Maddie had some quite challenging experiences at that birthday party, because a lot of people who were invited didn't attend, and that just makes you feel so abandoned and so isolated. If you invited friends and wider acquaintances and peers and then they don't turn up, it feels like a stain on your reputation, the fact that people aren't that interested in you, and it's a message that no 13-year-old girl wants to actually experience. So I imagine it was upsetting for Maddie as much as it was a celebration with people genuinely love her. There must have been a part of her that felt dejected because of that situation. And also, you can absolutely compound that sense of rejection by her mother not being present. She should have been there to comfort Maddie, to let her know that in spite of these people not coming, she was still the center of the universe. So later that same day, which again is the 25th of February 2024, at 8:30 p.m., Jen Soto's sister, so Maddie's aunt, drops her off at home at the party. Now, just to be clear, Jen Soto is not with Maddie's father. Maddie's father actually got married 2 months after Maddie was born to another woman. So that relationship actually hasn't been present in her life as parents together. But nonetheless, he was involved in Maddie's life and has a clear relationship with her and loves her very much. But they've never essentially been present as a couple in Maddie's life. And that means, of course, that Jen Soto has likely had other relationships. And the one that she's been involved in for quite a long time, on and off situation, was with a guy called Stefan Stern. Now, they had been together since 2017, and he'd actually lived with Jennifer Soto and Maddie until December 2023. At which point, it seems like he'd gone home to his parents in Northport, which is about 4 hours away from where Maddie and her mother live, but he did return occasionally, from what I can tell. Now, besides Jennifer Soto and Maddie and Stefan Stern, it appears that at least two other roommates stayed in Jen Soto's home during the period of Maddie being alive. And the reason I'm putting that out there right now is because some of the details that I'm going to talk about today, I find are quite harrowing, and it just concerns me when I think about other adults being around in Maddie's life, particularly when I talk about the behaviour that was seen as appropriate in the home that I think that to any well-adjusted human being will seem completely outlandish when I describe them. Now, Stefan Stern, who's a very odd character, we'll go into detail about him shortly, he basically tells Jennifer Soto that Maddie's taken her nighttime medicine and was getting ready for bed that evening because she's working at this point, as I've noted. She gets back about 10:30 p.m. Now, at 11 p.m., she basically says to Stefan Stern that she needs to get a rest, she needs to sleep, she suffers from anxiety. So she tells Stefan, a man who is not biologically related to Maddie, to go and sleep upstairs with Maddie while she sleeps downstairs. Now, I appreciate we have step relationships.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's in families. And there are parents who've been with a child since day dot, and that child looks at them as their mother or their father. And I also appreciate co-sleeping. Lots of people co-sleep. I co-sleep with my own daughter and my husband because she is an infant of 1 year old. I get that it can be a really powerfully growing experience and bonding experience for people to do so. But this is a whole different world. Stefan Stern has only been in Maddie's life for several years. She's 13, so she's spent half her life without him. He is certainly not an individual who for the last few months has even been around the home. And yet the mother is advising that he go to a separate room with her now teenage daughter while she sleeps downstairs because she's got anxiety. Just gonna say, if I had a daughter of 13 years of age and there was a grown-ass man in bed with her that was not directly related to her or had not been there since day dot, I would have anxiety that he was anywhere near her bed. But apparently this is something that was quite normal. This is something that had been going on for a very long time. It's a regular occurrence for Maddie. And I don't even know how to begin dissecting how inappropriate this is. This is something that screams predator. This is something that screams inappropriate. Because if you're in a relationship with somebody and you're their partner and they suffer from anxiety and depression, and therefore they struggle to sleep at times. If their suggestion was, hey, why don't you go and get into my kid's bed? I'd be like, well, I don't want social services involved. I don't want the police involved. I don't want people getting the wrong idea. There's a whole heap of reasons why I'm not going to do that. But you know what I will do? I'll go and sleep on the couch. I'm going to leave the child in a safe space where they are given their rest and recuperation appropriately. And I will go and sleep on the floor. Or you know what? I'll go sleep somewhere else. I'll just go and sleep back at my parents' house, which he could do, or I'll go and get a hotel, anything that is going to make sure that that child does not have an imposition placed on them. It is highly inappropriate. And also, I've done some research and found that an ex-girlfriend of Stephen Stearns actually spoke to deputies after this crime begins to play out and said that he had told her that he was sharing a bed with Maddie and that he justified his behaviour by saying that he needed to cuddle with Madeline to help her sleep. If you don't have goosebumps all over your body, I don't know what's going on, but just consider that. So he is kind of looking for a permission base at this moment in time. He wants that person, that party he's talking to say, you know what, that's completely normal. I mean, if you're not getting into bed with a totally non-biologically related child and cuddling them, even though they're on the brink of adolescence on a regular basis, I don't know what you're doing wrong. This is literally why he's saying that. He knows that it's not okay, but he believes that if you can kind of validate it by wrapping it up in this, I'm just a really good guy. I'm just one of those people who wants to make sure this child gets comfort. And I'm sacrificing my own sleep and my own time so I can go ahead and do that by cuddling Maddie to sleep. That, again, screams predator. And by the way, it's also very, very resonant of the kind of personality that Stearns has. He's an individual who's very, very good at thinking only about his own needs and always appearing like he's the victim. Even in this case, he's getting across that he's a martyr. He's doing it for Maddie. She's the one who needs him. He's just helping her to sleep. And it just pangs of the kind of paedophile behaviour that we regularly hear about in child abuse cases. And she actually talked about a conversation where he went on to say that he had woken up while in bed with Madeline with an erection. That's, again, is just showing you the lack of boundaries that he has on every single level. Because anybody with an ounce of decorum, an ounce of ethics, an ounce of morality, if that had happened to you in bed with your own child, you wouldn't even say it. You wouldn't want it to be conflated with anything sexual. Even if you were a guy waking up with your son because you'd shared a bed because you'd fell asleep reading him The Gruffalo, if you had that physical experience, which is common for men biologically, physiologically, you wouldn't go around saying that to people because you'd be like, you don't want to conflate anything sexual in nature with your child. It's two totally separate things. And again, when men who are child abusers do this, they're pushing a boundary. It's not just about legitimizing it for himself. It's not just about giving himself a permission base. It's about pushing boundaries with other people. How is this person going to react? Because the thing about paedophiles and child molesters is they like networks. They like to be able to test people out. They like to be able to figure out which other deviants might be around them. And unsurprisingly, this woman didn't want contact with this deviant after he had had these conversations with her. Now, the next day, so this is after the 13th birthday, after him returning to Maddie and Jen Soto's home, after a period of time when he's been living at his parents' house, so this is him returning again, not on her birthday to see her, but on her birthday after she's had the party. This is when he's returned from his parents a few hours away, and now he's being the devoted parent, apparently. So according to Stearns, he says that he and Maddie get up around 7 to 7.15 a.m. that next morning. He wanted to get a really early start because, you know, he's a devoted family man. He's the kind of guy that gets the girl up to get her ready for school. So she's got everything together and they can go out and have a nice time in the morning, chat away to school and so on and so forth. And they're going to go and get McDonald's on the way to school because, you know, he's such a good guy. He then says that he basically dropped her off a few blocks from Hunters Creek Middle School, which is near Peace United Methodist Church on the Town Boulevard. It's about half a mile, in fact, from her school. Except the issue with his story is that Maddie never got to school. She just seemed to disappear into the ether. I mean, apparently, according to Sturz, he drops her off safe and sound. He's somebody who's absolutely devoted to her. He's somebody who wants to protect and care for her. He's the kind of guy who wants to cuddle her to sleep. And now he's dropped her off, and essentially she's meant to have got to school. But that isn't the case. So when it comes to the end of the day, when Maddie's mum goes to the school, basically she does so because she's spoken to school when Maddie hasn't returned, and they want to investigate, well, what's happened. And the school say, well, you know what? She never actually turned up, full stop. So she never arrived. Now, the CCTV footage of Jennifer Soto and Sturz turning up at school is worrying, as far as I'm concerned, on a range of levels. But understandably, it's also very helpful, because these days so much of our lives are filmed that when we get to child missing cases, we can analyse exactly what's going on. And immediately, he's so detailed. And one of the things about being super detailed is, when you're terrified because your child is missing, the chances are you're going to be reacting in a panicky way. And the reason you're going to be acting in a panicky way is, when you have a relationship with a child, when you love a child, and when they're missing, you don't jump to that they're probably just hanging out at a friend's, they've probably just wagged the day at school, they've probably done something naughty and they'll come home later. You go to, they are in a ditch dead, or they've been abducted. You go to the very worst case scenario. It's a protective reflex. What you want to do is to have that feeling of cortisol and adrenaline running through your veins so you can run around the streets and try to bring home your baby. And that isn't what you feel. In fact, Sturz gives this very detailed but calm conversation about what's happened to the detectives who are starting to investigate it. And that in itself speaks of something very disturbing, because it's not typical behaviour.
So she wanted me dropped off at school. She wanted me dropped off like half a block away so she can walk.
It's an image thing. She's in the face. Yeah.
But he dropped her off half a block away and drove away.
Okay. Did she ever go to school, though?
No, we called school.
She was walking in that direction. She was rifling through her backpack, just looking for something. I thought maybe she was just looking for headphones before she got her walking on.
Yeah.
But she was just kind of, you know, shambling over in that direction. It looked the same as any other morning.
I got confirmation from the school that she never made it. They sent me an email saying she didn't make it. Mm-hmm. But I also spoke to her, or emailed one of her teachers directly. And looked at all her attendance for all her periods and told me she'd make it at all today.
And when was the last time you seen her? Do you know the around what time?
Around 8:30, 8:40 when we dropped her off.
And how tall is she?
5'1".
Yeah. Weight?
110 pounds.
So 110,
120. Hair color?
Blonde,
like that.
Like a dirty blonde?
Yeah.
Okay. Eye color?
Blue.
Does she have any markings on her, like any scars or anything like that?
A distinctive beauty mark on her face.
On her face.
On the face, like below the nose or near the nose?
Yeah, like right in that area there. It's very distinctive. You'd know it if you saw it. Big.
Any other scars or anything like that, which you know?
Scars?
No.
Tattoos?
No. You'd be surprised. Did you put out the description?
I put the top part out. I didn't get the rest of that stuff here, so he put it out.
Now, when they start to ask him to go through what happened, he said that he dropped Maddie off, apparently near school, but it's actually nowhere near school, really. There is no reason why she would be dropped where she was dropped. But he says, yeah, you know what? It might seem a little bit strange, but at the end of the day, Maddie didn't like being seen in my car. I've got this old silver Lincoln car, and she kind of feels it's a little bit unattractive to end up in school being dropped off in this particular vehicle. Again, we all appreciate teenagers in particular can be very specific about what they want to look like and how they want to convey who they are. But for the most part, every single teenager I've ever met in the history of teenagers, including me as a teenager, if it meant that I could get another 15 minutes sleep and I could just get dropped off directly, I was like, hell, if I could have got my dad, who never actually drove me to school, but if I could have got him to drive me to the classroom and deliver me to my desk, that's what I would have done. So it's an odd scenario to tell the officer. And when you look at the way he describes his movements, again, he's very descriptive, but to some degree, it just doesn't speak of somebody who's panicking. And apparently, during this trip to school, she turns McDonald's down twice. She turns McDonald's down?
Like, even if you're not hungry as a young person, some adult offers you a free McDonald's, you're going to be like, hell, I'll put it in my bag and I'll save it for later. So they don't stop to buy the McDonald's. He also makes this big thing of the fact that she was sleeping most of the journey, and arguably they've set off super early. So if she's that exhausted that she automatically falls asleep in the car, you'd imagine, well, why did he have to set off so early? Surely she could have had a little bit more time in bed. And also, if this is some kind of stepdad and daughter day, and he's taking her because he's such a devoted father, and bear in mind, he cuddles her to sleep so that she can get a good night's sleep. So she should be wide awake at this point. The truth is, she should not be sleeping because he would be engaging with her. They've had a conversation. She's got herself ready. Why would she be going to sleep immediately when she gets into the car? He then said that she gets out of the car when he drops her off safely. And then he watches her as she stops and she starts looking in her bag, and he says that it looks like that she's looking for something. But again, this idea that he's watching her as she walks off to make sure that she's safe. And just noticing, you know, that she's rummaging around in her bag, not thinking, hey, Maddie, what's going on? Have you forgotten something? Which is what, again, every single parent would do if they were in this situation. You'd just automatically be like, hey, have you lost something? Have you forgotten something? Can we get something? But remember, it's meant to be really, really early, so this wouldn't be a problem. But no, he just watches her do that, and then he's like, yeah, I'll just drive off. Now, one of the things that Maddie had was a diagnosis of ADHD. He said that this basically makes her forgetful, and then it turns out that she apparently didn't have her phone. So his argument in that situation is that she was probably rummaging around in the bag for a phone. Now, gonna throw it out there. Haven't met a kid in a decade who isn't stapled to their phone, like literally stapled. For most young people, you'd be like, do you want food or do you want technology? They'd be like, oh, technology. I can live on technology for at least 3 weeks without any food. That's the way young people feel, because it's not just a phone. It's not just a contact device. It's actually a computer for them. It's something that connects them with their friends. It's a social network. It's all the platforms that they're engaged with. It's the apps that they use, and so on and so forth. So the idea that she would just forget her phone with ADHD or otherwise just doesn't ring true. Because like I said, young people check. They check immediately to note that they have the technology with them. And also, it turns out in that backpack that she'd be carrying would be her laptop. So the school gave them basically a piece of technology they could use to do their work on. She had that with her. So she's organized enough apparently to carry that, but she isn't organized enough to actually have her phone. But again, he's very dismissive, and it's that sense of, oh, you know, it's just the way that Maddie is. Again, this thread of connection, there's something good about our relationship. We get on really, really well with each other. And yet, equally, I just drove off when I saw her searching through her bag, albeit that I know she's forgetful, and it could be that she's left something important at home, even though I've got loads of time. Now, friends and teachers who know Maddie Soto, they're really shocked that she's just disappeared. They said that she was a really sweet girl. She was somebody who was known to suffer from anxiety, and they just couldn't from the get-go believe for one moment that she'd run away. They said that she had no...
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Issues with anyone. Now, one friend apparently mentioned that Madeline's menstrual cycle was late. Now, that in itself makes me afraid, because I think to myself, a friend saying that this is a situation that's been arisen, that could suggest that Maddie has been concerned about what's going on for her. Also, with missed menstrual cycles, we often look at potential sexual abuse, because clearly, as a very young girl, it's highly unlikely she's having any kind of consensual sex. So that is a concerning factor in this case, right from the get-go. Stearns absolutely tries to appear like a deeply concerned stepdad. He goes on about how close they are. And of course, he can't help but tell the investigator who's questioning about what's happened and where Maddie's last movements were, that one of the things that happened was the interaction as she got out of the car. She basically told him that she loved him and he said that he loved her. And again, off they part ways with this all but perfect relationship as they leave one another behind. Sadly, as far as Maddie is concerned, leaving him behind for the very last time because something terrible is going to happen to her. But this is the picture being painted. So what Stearns does during these conversations with the investigators is really try to affirm this really loving stepfather's actions, that he's somebody who just has the best interests of Maddie at heart, that she is his person. She is one of those people that just looks to him for advice and guidance. You know, basically the only thing that is missing during the conversations with him and investigators is a halo. Just like a halo, not a real one. He'd have to go out and buy like some kind of attached halo because he's not going to get one from anywhere else. But that's what he's just missing, just to like have a little press button and just light up his own halo whenever he talks about his relationship with Maddie. You know, he was her person, he describes himself as. Her person. Like, he's a knight in shining armor. He's an individual who's her first port of call. If she's got a problem, it's him that she's going to go to. This is the picture that he's painting. But in spite of that, like I said, from the very get-go, investigators are looking at him. He's in the direct line of fire. There is just something that is speaking to their intuition that makes him stand out as a potential suspect, and it's going to get worse for him. And the reason for that is, as we know, the way that the world works today is technology-based. You have a phone. Your phone is basically Big Brother watching you. We can all think that it's there for our benefit, and indeed, it is. But nonetheless, it's also a tracker. It lets people know what we've been doing, when we've been doing it. It even lets people know what we've been searching. If they subpoena your phone, if they get any access to it, they're going to find out everything about who you are. From your last searches to the photos you took 10 years ago, they have access to everything. And one of the things that it's going to do is going to track your movements. And a big problem is if you are saying that one of the things that went wrong on that morning is that Maddie didn't have her phone with her, and then you're suggesting that you didn't have yours either. It's a little bit coincidental when he's being asked about what had happened to kind of suggest, oh, well, you know, I didn't have my phone either, because it's a tracker, isn't it? So if you want to avoid people knowing what you were doing and your movements, well, it can be very convenient saying, well, it was left at home, so you wouldn't be able to track my movements using this anyway. Because believe me, from the get-go, Stearns believes that he can spin a yarn and people are going to believe it. Now, the officers start to dig deep into Stearns' movements, and literally everything very quickly starts to fall apart. So on the 26th of February 2024, this is a day that Maddie's basically goes missing, at 7:35 a.m., they're able to track CCTV where he's discarding a trash bag which are filled with items in a trash compactor of his apartment complex. So he's basically throwing something into this trash compactor. And they also catch on video, as he's doing that, a female wearing a green sweater in the passenger side, and they believe that that is Madeline. She's in the front seat of the vehicle, and she appears at this point really slumped over, and her mouth's ajar, and she's in an unusual position for somebody who is just sleeping. Also, let's just contextualize that. If they're at the apartment area where they live, why would she immediately be in such a deep slumber? Just consider that. We all appreciate that we can get in the car, we can put our head back, we can lean often on the seatbelt so we kind of get a bit of support, make ourselves comfy, try to snooze, get in a few extra Z's. We are not immediately, the moment that we get in the car, slumped over with our mouth ajar. That usually happens after a period of being asleep. We've gone into a deep slumber. So that's deeply disturbing. Then at 7:50 a.m., his car leaves the apartment complex. It goes through the back gate. He's wearing a red shirt. And again, pictured in that vehicle is a female wearing a green sweater. At this point, they notice that she appears to be sitting up with her head slumped to the left side. She is belted into the seat, but like I said, it's an unusual position. Then at 8:19 a.m, he's back, enters through the front gate of the apartment complex. There's still a passenger in the car. Still looks very much like what they've seen on prior CCTV. So they believe that this is also Madeline. But bear in mind, he said he dropped her off. She was rummaging around in her bag. At the end of the day, she was safe. They said they loved each other. She'd gone. But here we are at 8:19, and apparently she's still present in the car. And she's in the same position as she was before. Now, again, if you get into a deep sleep, you can sometimes end up in the same position, but cars move around, and you tend to move around as well when you are in a car asleep. So that feels really disturbing. And of course, the most imperative part of this is that it blows his timeline to pieces.
She had a happy weekend. She just turned 13. She had a 13th birthday party. She was happy that we were all together here. She was very happy. She was a happy kid. She's very sweet. She's a very sweet girl. I dropped her off early. I could have waited longer. She looked okay. She was walking towards the school when I saw her. It was like any other day, so I went on with my day. You know where she could be. We were scared. We just wanted her home. Not knowing.
So the unknown is coming.
Yeah, it's like our whole world is upside down.
Remember, they made good time. She'd been dropped off. He'd last seen her digging through her bag. So all of a sudden, his story just falls apart. Now, apparently, whilst all this has been playing out, Jen Soto, at around 9 to 9:30 a.m., gets out of bed. She heads to a doctor's appointment. So she's not present when all of this is going on. She's been asleep. However, one of the things that she did when she was asked by the police to describe what her daughter was wearing, she did. And she acted as if she was present and saw her daughter getting ready. She specifically talks about what she was wearing, that she was wearing black shorts. So that, again, is a discrepancy in the story, because why would you not tell the police the truth? Why would you not say, well, I didn't see my daughter, I was asleep? You might seem a little bit remiss of your parenting duties, but why would you not tell them exactly what happened? You've got nothing to hide. Also, she uses the term we a great deal when she's interviewed. We did this. We saw that. And again, there's that unity between her and Stearns. So they're kind of saying, oh yeah, we both saw what happened. We both saw that Maddie was okay. We saw what she was wearing and so on and so forth. But here she's saying, well, actually, I didn't necessarily see her. I actually just heard her potentially. So very distinct from what she originally tells the investigators. Now, of course, the officers are going to tell Stearns that they absolutely know his timeline is off. And when he has that information and he's actually told, listen, it isn't adding up. You weren't where you said you were going to go. You didn't follow the route you said you had. And the time itself doesn't make sense. As opposed to being like, really? What? That doesn't make any sense. I definitely did that. And look, we all make mistakes. Nobody's great on time. I'm the kind of person who would really struggle to put a timeline together. But he's really detailed when he initially talks to the police about it. This is not somebody who's sitting there like I would be going, I literally don't even know what day it is now. Is it 3 o'clock in the afternoon? Is it 7 a.m. in the morning? Some of us, like me, are highly problematic around time and memory and those kind of orders. The dyslexic brain in my case. But he doesn't have a problem. He's been absolutely fluent. He's not just detailed where he went, the times he went, where he dropped her off, the route he took. He's not just gone on about what she wore, their conversations, how she was feeling, and the loving relationship that they had as she said goodbye and he said goodbye, with the last words being, I love you. No, he's been able to fluently get that across. And then when he's confronted by these discrepancies, he just goes, okay. So he hasn't even formulated at that point another counter to the situation, a lie. So he's thinking on his feet. He's not denying it because clearly they've got the information. So on a psychological level, he recognizes he's got to come up with something and he's trying to think about plausibility. How is he now going to entertain the fact that what he said was wrong? And so instead he says, oh, yeah, actually, you know what? And I remember I forgot something. I forgot my clicker. So then I drove back to the apartment to collect it. Now, I don't know about you, but if your much-loved stepdaughter had disappeared, you were going to know exactly what you had done in the last 24 hours. We're not asking about 4 weeks ago. We're asking about your movements in the last 24 hours, of which he had been very forthcoming. And yet, in spite of this being so powerfully important, in spite of this timeline being crucial so they figure out the last movements of Maddie, now a whole new layer has been introduced. So he didn't drop her off at that time. His last image, therefore, likely wasn't her rummaging around in the backpack. And they didn't make good time because clearly they've had to rush back to the apartment and so on and so forth. But he immediately comes up with this idea that, well, okay, now you've told me, that makes sense, but you know, my head's a bit of a mess and it's just one of those things that I forgot this crucial piece of information. It's absolutely galling that he is doing this. And again, it just adds fuel to the fire where suspicion is concerned. And let's just talk about Stefan Stearns for a moment, because this guy is a very strange person. It's the only way I can describe it. He's a very odd man. And I've listened to some interviews by people who grew up with him, and to say he has some very questionable and concerning behaviours is the understatement of the century. So for example, when he gets to, shall we say, early onset adolescence, he decides that, you know what would be a nice pastime? I'll just store my own sperm in jars. I know, all of you out there are thinking, well, some people like to collect etchings, some people like to run, some people collect butterflies and do that weird pinning them down and putting them in frames. Some children have some bizarre habits, I get it. I am yet in my history of working with all of the young people I work with and also every young person I ever met in my own experience and when I was a kid being around them, none of them were like, you know what, Emma? The thing I've got really into recently is sperm in jars. Specifically my own sperm in jars. So that screams at me as being deeply problematic where this man is concerned. And then to add insult to injury, this guy's a voyeur of the highest level. He's a sexual predator from a really early age. So he's caught secretly recording girls in showers. And one of them was a girlfriend of his friend. And it caused a big issue between them, understandably. So this is a young man developing into a high-level sexual predator. It's as simple as that, apparently, as well. There was a shared drive that one of his friends found who was staying with him, and it had some very questionable images on it. And they again fell into a situation where there were rows between them. And I cannot absolutely confirm this, but there is some debate that his mother knew about the highly inappropriate information that was on those shared drives and paid off the friend who could have gone to the authorities. Like I said, I can't confirm that's absolute truth, but I've listened to interviews and this is one of the things that's been said. And I would say that to that friend, you really need to do better. It's your job not to get paid off if somebody's acting illegally, immorally, and in this case, potentially looking at completely inappropriate material online. It's your job to go to the authorities, turn that person in, because we are talking about a child in this case who is no longer with us. And if these kind of high-level predators can be taken off the streets, well, the chances are that girls like Maddie Soto wouldn't die. Ironically as well, he ended up working at Disney on the journey into imagination at Epcot. What does that tell you? High-level predators who are interested in children inappropriately, they always find jobs or powerful situations that involve access to children. And it is terrifying to imagine that as your gorgeous children got onto that journey into imagination, there was this absolute predator looking at them. There was this predator probably taking photographs of them, selling them to you, and so on and so forth, all the while being a heinous child abuser. Also, one of the things that I heard about in interviews between friends of his was that he had a really bad temper. He could be really rageful at times. Friends of his said that his father always came across as quite a typical person, but apparently his mother was, how will I phrase this, a challenging person to be around. I'm trying to be kind. That was not exactly what they said. They would say things that were rather more negative than what I've just put across. but nonetheless, challenging is the word, and you can make of that what you will. Now, Stearns still, even though his story is falling apart, he's telling the police about how he's met his person. He said that they constantly texted each other, they were always FaceTiming, and actually that is validated. A friend of Maddie's said the two were really close, but this is often a misconception. So when you have a groomer, when you have a sexual abuser of children, what they will often do is insert themselves in so many areas of their lives that the child feels they can't escape, that they are suffocated by this person. And also, this person will often leverage positives in their life so that that child feels even more entrapped. So it can be that they buy them nice things, it can be that they tell them nice things, it can be that they're on side with them during difficult times, it can be that they coerce them into believing that what's happening between them inappropriately and the child is perfectly normal. They can also threaten them, of course, all those things can happen. So when you see a child who's constantly on a phone to an adult, and that relationship isn't an adult that's directly related to them, often that's a big red flag. It's saying this adult is spending far too much of their free time with this young kid. And the thing about children is they're amazing beings. And as adults, of course, we share our space with our own children, sometimes our children's friends, and we have fun and we listen to them and we engage. But let's be fair, they're not giving a great added value intellectually to your life. You've kind of already been there and done that. You spend time with them, but it's contextual time because it's usually involving peers or experiences or your partner and so on and so forth. It's not something that is uniquely invested in by two parties between one another, which is directly about them having this very intense relationship. And what I believe is happening there is, yes, to kids who are friends of Maddie, they'll be looking and thinking, oh, he's just a really invested adult. But to adults, if you're seeing that, you're like, why is this guy spending so much time with this child? He's in a relationship with the mother, not the daughter.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
And so this is likely to do with his grooming behavior. He's reinforcing that he is her person and also making her feel completely trapped in the relationship. And bear in mind, we started this case today with Maddie just about turning 13. That's a very pivotal age for a young girl. You are becoming a young woman, the young person that you are growing into as a young adult. Yes, you're very much at the beginning of it. Yes, you don't know very much, but you're starting to develop. You're having conversations at school about relationships. People are starting to talk about sex. And suddenly, you go from this naive state where things can be happening to you behind closed doors that don't feel right, or sometimes you don't even think about it because you just accepted it as normal, and then you get this ultimate shock where people start talking about consent and sexual behavior and relationships. And you're like, oh my God, this man, he's doing those things to me behind closed doors. So what groomers tend to do is as children are getting to these ages where there are these conflicts, where they're occurring more and more, and that person might start to lose control of the child they're abusing, they really up the ante on the relationship because they know that they're in danger to some degree. And I have no doubt whatsoever that Maddie Soto was starting to come to terms with the fact that she was being abused by this man. And it was probably deeply conflictual for her. And she was somewhere between that sense of personal acceptance that she's a victim and a fear of betraying a man that has built so many pictures in her head about their relationship. And that thin line was getting thinner. And when that thin line gets thinner, the perpetrator gets scared. And when a perpetrator is scared or stressed, they act in ways that can sometimes be highly violent and very dangerous for the child. That's how groomers operate. And if the threats don't work, well, let me tell you, at times, they take it to a whole different level. Now, as the police start to look at Stern's movements, because he used license plate recognition, they start to uncover some really disturbing footage. So at 9:40 a.m., they've actually got video showing Stern's vehicle pulling into a Holiday Inn on St. John Young Parkway. And at 9:42, they see Stern still wearing that red shirt that they've got him dumping the trash that he was by the trash compactor. He was wearing it then. He exits the car and then he opens the trunk, but then he opens the passenger side door and apparently carries what appears to be a limp body to the trunk of the vehicle. Now, we can all immediately assume who that body belongs to. Then at 9:44 a.m., he's seen driving away. Now, at 10 a.m., Stearns calls Jennifer Soto and he says that Maddie didn't end up getting McDonald's as he planned because she was too tired. He also explained to her that he basically accidentally left his phone at the apartment. So he's covering his tracks. Now, one of the things that I will point out about that particular call is it could be one of two things. It could be him having a conversation with Jen Soto, so they both look like they're talking about Maddie in a way where she's alive when they both know that she's actually dead. But I would argue that in this case, it definitely sounds like Jen Soto believes that Maddie is all right. So at this moment in time, I believe that she doesn't know that anything terrible has happened to her child. We're not going to excuse the fact that she allowed a man to get into bed with her 13-year-old girl and had been doing that for quite a long time. It's disgusting. It's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. It's terrible parenting. It's neglectful and criminal, in my opinion. But that call makes me question some of the things I'm seeing online about people believing that she's absolutely guilty of being involved in Maddie's murder. People can put things in the comments about their feelings, maybe you disagree with me, but that's just something that I want to get across. Now, between 11 a.m. and 11:15 a.m., Jen Soto comes back from the doctors. Stearns, at this point, is home at the time. Cool as a cucumber. Cool as a cucumber. This guy has got the emotional depth of a small, drizzly puddle. I swear to you. This man has no emotional cogency, apart from victim state, which we'll talk about later on. But imagine having done something terrible to a child. Imagine having done that on their 13th birthday, potentially, or just after. Imagine having taken a child's body and done something awful with it, and then you're just at home, cool as a cucumber, to meet the mother of that now deceased child. What does that tell you about the sociopathic, psychopathic tendency of this human being? Now, at 1:20 p.m. that same day, he's actually seen changing a tire on Old Hickory Tree Road. The timeline also shows that at 4:30 p.m., Jen Soto goes to pick up Maddie from Hunters Creek Middle School. And of course, as we know, finds out that Maddie didn't attend any classes that day. Then at 4:35 p.m., multiple cameras capture what's believed to be Stearns arriving to the complex trash compactor in the silver Lincoln sedan. Now, according to documents, he removes a tyre or what appears to be the tread of a tyre and then tosses it into the compactor because obviously, as we know, he blew a tyre. Now, by that late afternoon, the police are not buying any of Stephen Stern's story, even though he's been telling everybody what a great father he is, even though he's been telling people that she was safe. At the end of the day, very quickly, they're saying none of this adds up. We've seen what you said initially. We've looked at the timeline, we've got the CCTV and the license plate recognition, and it does not make sense. So he's interviewed, and at this point he's asked for his phone. Now, you can imagine, can't you? It is pretty intense when police officers ask you to hand over your technology, because I don't know about you, me and my sister have got some very questionable texts between one another about my mother. We love her very dearly, but you know, we like to have a little bit of fun sometimes. Bit macabre at times, just the way that we are. Wouldn't want it read out cold in court. It's just humour, right? So even me, and I have very limited stuff I would be fearful of on my phone, bar those daft conversations that I have, which might paint me in a bad picture if you did read it in a very cold way, as if it was very serious as opposed to sarcastic. But For the most part, if a police officer today asked me to hand on my phone, I would still feel weird about it. Because I'd be like, gosh, I do search some pretty strange things because of my channels and so on and so forth. And you just feel like, oh, have I done something wrong? And most of us just have that automatic sense of guilt whenever we're talking to a police officer when we're completely innocent. We're just like, maybe they will find something that I didn't even know about myself. Maybe somebody else has been on my phone. You know, all those things go through your head. So I totally understand why Stearns is reluctant about giving consent to search his phone. But when you are guilty of something, you have a very fine line to walk psychologically. And that is, you want to come across like you have nothing to hide. And bear in mind, Stearns has been putting it out there. I'm just a really good dad. I'm just a really loving person. I just want to bring Maddie home. So you're going to do everything in your power. You're not even thinking of yourself. Remember, he is her person. He is the person that she goes to with a problem. So he's going to absolutely, if he's playing that role, hand that phone over, take it, do whatever you need, anything that's going to bring this child back. And he knows that. If he refused to do that, it would look very shady. But as he agrees, he tells the actual officer that he's had an issue and he's factory reset his phone. Now, it turns out he factory reset his phone twice. Now, I'm sure a lot of you out there have factory reset your phones. It's happened a couple of times in my life where I have done that, but I've never done it twice by mistake. There's quite a few things to go through to actually factory reset your phone, not once, but twice. So automatically, we're drawn into a man who's trying to cover his tracks. And you can imagine, can't you, how the officers are thinking about this in that moment in time. They're thinking, he's factory reset his phone. How convenient that as this child he was last seen with has disappeared, and as his timeline just crumbles ultimately, now he's got a problem with the very thing that essentially could at least indicate that he's an innocent party in this, and of course could certainly cement that he was a guilty party in this. And it's just been miraculously wiped clean. Well, that's what he thinks. It always blows my mind that perpetrators in cases like this still believe that if you factory reset or wipe your phone, that the police and investigators are not going to be able to get the material back. It's naive beyond belief. Now, of course, the moment that police realise that a child actually is missing, and I would say there is a real problem in the fact that initially they don't necessarily take it too seriously. There is a gap in the time where she's reported missing and the actual actions kicking into place. But by 8 p.m. on the 26th of February 2024, when she's been reported missing, at this point, the police come out to the school, they canvass the area, they bring out a bloodhound, but they have no success. So we're now talking about it getting to the late hours and people who are in her family starting to get really, really afraid that something truly terrible has happened to this beautiful girl. Now the next day, so this is the 27th of February 2024, Jen Soto actually does an interview with Fox 35. Now, of course, if you are a mother of a child who has gone missing, you are going to scream it from the rooftops. You want as much noise to advertise the fact that you have a missing child as you can possibly get. And it's really weird. Less Jen Soto being weird and absolutely more Stearns. Stearns is like a ghoul. That's the only way I can describe him. I mean, his colouring is really, really white. And then he's got this real contrast with the dark beard. And the lighting of the actual footage makes him look even whiter. And he's just kind of like hovering in the background. So he's there, but he's not actually present in the interview. And also, another interview that I heard between one of his old friends and a podcaster is that when he saw Stearns in the background, he actually said he killed her. So he didn't know whether Maddie had been taken by a stranger. He didn't know whether she'd had an accident. He just saw immediately the fact that Stearns was in the picture and he was like, he has killed her. It was an automatic guttural reaction. And that again just speaks of the kind of history that Stearns clearly has with the people who knew him. A lot of people who have talked about Stearns growing up say he was just one of those strange guys. He was part of the group of friends who was relatively popular, but he was just quite loner to some degree. People didn't warm to him at all. He was just one of those individuals who from the get-go was very, very strange. And he looks utterly strange in that footage. And now, one of the things that I picked up out of the interview that really disturbed me is her language. So she said,
I'm trying to hope for the best, but I'm scared for her. I want her to be okay and I want her to be safe. I don't want her to come back harmed. I just want her back, whatever that means.
I just want her back, whatever that means. I mean, whatever that means could suggest I just want her body back, for example. It could mean that there is a sense within her that she isn't going to get her child back unharmed. She might even not get her child back at all. So she would just like to have her back, whatever state she's in. And I did find that very disconcerting. I didn't understand what that was insinuating, and it felt quite a macabre way of expressing her desire to have her child home. And like I said, he is floating around in the background and it's very odd. Now, on the 28th of February at 4 p.m, Sheriff Mina said that Madeline Soto had basically left her phone at home on the Monday, which was the day of her disappearance. But when deputies searched the phone, they actually recognised that doing that breakdown from what she'd been talking about on her phone to her friends was disturbing. So she'd actually told one of her friends that she wanted to live in the woods after her 13th birthday. Now, this actually triggered a search in the woods behind Hunters Creek Middle School, because they obviously were thinking to themselves, well, maybe she has run away. Maybe she has gone to live in the woods. But what does that tell you? Now, we're all dramatic when we're young people. I appreciate that. We've probably texted things to our friends, even adults, that is a little bit dramatic. But the fact that she's saying that she wants to go and live in the woods, in fact, that reminds me of Eileen Wuornos's story. You know, she had to go and live in the woods because she was so dejected and so abused and so abandoned by her family and her community. And that's where she ended up. But this idea that this little girl who's just 13 is thinking it would be better for me if I went and lived in the woods, it means that all is not good at home. There is obviously something really seriously amiss in the household. Now, bear in mind, whilst this is all happening, whilst they're finding out this information off Maddie's phone, they also have Stefan Stearns. And wow, it is revealing. And at this point, an emergency arrest warrant is issued for Stefan Stearns and for very good reason. So this is the same day. This is still the 28th of February. It's 9:52 p.m. And they arrest him. And they arrest him not on the disappearance of Maddie, not on the murder of Maddie, but actually they arrest him on other charges. He's named prime suspect in the Madeline Soto case. And the state's attorney's office actually filed 60 criminal charges against Stefan Stearns. And that's because of the images and videos they found on Stefan Stearns' phone. Because he has been sexually violating and molesting this little girl for years. Some of the time in the pictures, it's clear that she's asleep, probably drugged up on medication. And some of the time she was awake. So this poor kid was being abused by this man who apparently was her person. This man who was able to get himself into her bed on a regular occurrence. The man who was shipped off by her own mother to give her cuddles as she went to sleep. He's got them in his phone. He's been making these indecent images, storing these indecent images, and believing that somehow by wiping his phone, they're not going to be able to get these images back. But boy, do they get his images back. And a lot of people say, well, why on earth did these predators keep these messages? Why do they keep these images? Why do they keep these videos? What is it about their psyche that makes them keep this incriminating information that can be so problematic for them? It's simple. Just like serial killers keep mementos, they can't help themselves. Their sexual deviance is so deeply entrenched within their psyche that what they want to do above everything else is relive it again and again and again and again. That's why they keep them. They're not consequentially thinking about what happens in a year's time when somebody gets hold of the phone. They're thinking about the fact it belongs to them. They hoard. They can't help themselves. We see it consistently where child predators are concerned. Sometimes they disseminate it. Sometimes they've got networks where they actually send it to other not rights, other deviants. But often it's a psychological containment. This is mine. This belongs to me. And that's the problem where predators are concerned, because that's how they feel about the victim as well. That's my victim. That's mine. I own that person.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at LEGENDZ.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
And they belong to me. And of course, that's okay whilst that person serves a purpose. But if they get to be problematic, well, that's when the predator and territorial mindset can say, I don't want this problem. I can get rid of this object now that I've hoarded and contained for such a long time. They're of no use to me now. They're threatening to me. But that's why these predators keep these images. Now, the investigation carried on going very quickly, just revealing more images, more videos depicting just horrible criminal acts. And the state attorney's office were sent this, and they then filed these charges. So he was charged with 8 counts of sexual battery of a child under 12, 5 counts of sexual battery with a child aged 12 to 18, 7 counts of lewd and lascivious molestation, and 40 counts of unlawful possession of materials depicting sexual performance by a child. It is the most grotesque description of what he did, isn't it? Because what we're talking about here is a child's life being decimated by a predator. Maddie had been enduring this for a long period of time, and she was enduring it in the sanctuary of her own home, in the sanctuary of her own bed, under the very nose of her mother. Now, law enforcement actually told Jen Soto that this had been happening. In fact, they said it was clear that Maddie had been sexually abused. She was just in a state of denial. They even told her that it was clear they had the evidence against Stephen Stern, and it was very clear there was sexual engagement happening in the pictures. They also said that there was something very, very notable about Stephen Stern, that there is something instantly recognisable about him, and the pictures demonstrate that it was him because of that. And she said that when she was shown the pictures, she didn't recognise anything at all. So even though she became apparently visibly upset after seeing the photographs, she didn't actually acknowledge, yes, this is my child. Now, bear in mind, as I said, they know it's Stearns. He had features that were apparently very recognisable. And it was clear from the footage that the images and the videos had been taken from inside Jennifer Soto's house. Yet here she is, living in a state of denial. Again, those of you who are sympathetic to her and empathetic to her will say, well, you know what? With respect, she's probably in a state of shock. She can't believe this is actually happening. It's her worst nightmares coming true. And now she's faced with the fact that she's brought this monster in her household and her brain can't compute it. And the easiest way to deal with that is to just not see what is in front of her eyes. Or it could just be that the house of cards are falling and she's realizing that she is now implicated, because she was sending that little girl off to sleep in the same bed as this monster. When Stearns was brought into Orange County Sheriff's Office, he was actually interviewed by both Kissimmee Police and OCSO detectives. And unsurprisingly, what did he do? He invoked his right to an attorney, so he didn't actually have an interview because clearly he knows he's banged to rights. He doesn't want to speak because the chances are he's going to make his situation worse, and he's guilty as hell. So of course he's not going to actually go and have a conversation with the investigators. And the sheriff actually said Stephen Stearns had an opportunity tonight to come clean with detectives and help lead them to the information about Maddie's disappearance. He said her loved ones deserve answers and OCSO and the Kissimmee Police will not stop until we find Maddie. Also, whilst Maddie was missing, it turned out some very strange things were happening back at Stephen Stearns' family home. This is where his elderly parents live. This is about 4 hours from where Jen Soto's house is in Northcote. Now, the police go because they want to have a look around the house. They've got a warrant to go and have a look inside because clearly there could be incriminating evidence there. When the police turn up, it is a scene to behold. So his mother, Stephen Stearns' mother, is basically hysterical outside the family home, and she's basically hysterical because she has found a sex torso. I kid you not. She has found a sex torso in Stephen Stearns' room. Now, I get it. Everyone's got their own kink. Most of us are pretty vanilla, but some people like to push the boundaries. But if I was in a relationship with a guy and he was like, you know, I like a little bit of kink, and I'd be like, oh, okay, what is it like, you know, a little bit of handcuffs, oh, I like handcuffs, okay, what else, like a little bit of a, I don't know, a little whip, well, I like a little bit of a whip, okay, what else is it, because you look like you're going down a whole different road, where I'm thinking we're going for some kind of light BDSM, no, I'm just saying, like, I like all of that, but one of the things that I really like, okay, I'm listening, is I really like having sex with this sex torso. Oh, that's like, when you say like a sex torso, what do you mean? I mean like a sex torso, like it's just a torso. Like it's not got arms, it's not got legs, it's not got a head. It's just like a, think about like a serial killer kind of style torso, that kind of torso. I like to have sex with that torso. Yeah? Do you know what? I just realized that, oh, you know my car that's not here? I think I left it running, and I think that I left the oven on, and I just remembered that, oh, my uncle's really ill. I'm just gonna back out slowly, looking at you directly in the eyes while you hold your sex torso and I remove myself from this situation permanently. That's what would happen in this situation. But apparently Stephen Stearns been hanging on to some sex torso in his home. And obviously his mother knows that Stephen Stearn is basically one of the people who was last to see Maddie. And she's immediately thought, oh my God, is this something to do with Maddie? Is this Maddie's actual torso? And she's ran outside shouting Maddie's name. Now again, everyone reacts differently under stress. But if one of my boys was under my roof, sharing time with his girlfriend elsewhere, and the child of that couple went missing, the last thing I would think if I found some weird sex torso in his room was, oh, he's probably killed the child that's gone missing. I'd just be like, I seriously need to talk about these kinks because this is just a little bit weird and it's going to be off-putting for future relationships. That's where my head would go. I would not be like, oh, it's probably likely my son has chopped her up and has probably put the rest of her body behind the house in the woodland. That was her mental process. According to the information that I've garnered, that was her mental process. If that does not deeply concern you about the ideas his family had about his capability and capacity, I don't know what will. And like I said, a lot of you are just sitting there right now thinking, what the fuck is a sex torso? Google it. They exist. They're horrendous. But yeah, she was found shouting Stephen's name and basically shouting Maddie's name as well. Another thing that was interesting is when the police actually spoke to his mother, because obviously she was in a state, she said that she was really concerned because she thought that he'd been in the house the night before and that he'd actually taken some money from the home, and also that her husband hadn't been present when she felt that this was all kicking off because he was meant to go and help her son find some housing because he has some kind of housing crisis. So it's a very strange situation in the home and also with what's going on around Stefan Stern and the way that his parents are relating to him, helping him potentially to find somewhere to live. Equally, he's taking money from the house, and equally, she thinks that maybe he's a massive sexual predator with a kid's torso in the bedroom. Now, some of the photos and videos that were found on Stern's cell phone, they were timestamped back to August 2022. That means that Maddie would have been around 11 at the time that that abuse was recorded. But like I said, that doesn't mean that's when it began. It just began recording it on that device at that point. Now, sadly, we get the very worst outcome in this case. On the 1st of March, Maddie's body was discovered in between bamboo trees on a property on Hickory Tree Road. She was in a fetal position. The officers who sadly found and confirmed that it was her body found that she was wearing a green hooded sweatshirt. She was also wearing blue jeans. Her body had been partially covered by pieces of dry grass. And the medical examiner reported that her body was in a state of decomposition with visible insect activity around her mouth, her left eye, her ears, and her right hand. We're talking about a 13-year-old little girl. She just celebrated her birthday. And now she's being written up in a report where she is being essentially decomposed and eaten by flies. That's her present. That's what happened at the very beginning of her 13th year. Now, the reason that her body was found was a witness had called the sheriff's office. He said that he'd seen a man changing a flat tire in the area that Maddie was reported missing. And the reason that he called was because of the description of the vehicle. It was a silver Lincoln that he'd seen on TV being described. And he recognised that that was something that reflected the car that he'd seen near the property. So this is obviously where Stearns was indeed changing the tire. So the same day that this plays out, he's transferred from Orange County Jail to the Osceola County Jail. And wow, he is somebody who just is such a victim. Because all you see in the footage as he's being transferred to, I would say, the driver being relatively empathic towards him, probably doesn't really know what this guy's been properly charged with. But essentially, he's listening to Stearns just moan about how it's been really difficult for him. It's been really hard for him because at the end of the day, you know, he's been cold. He's not been comfortable.
Quite regularly, sleeping on bare metal. The first night I was on a concrete floor with a roll of toilet paper for a pillow. Nothing else. Begging for a blanket or a pad to sleep on for like 2 days. I think they were supposed to do stuff.
You know, this is a guy who genuinely, if it were possible to immediately eject to Hellfire, he would be ejected. In fact, there would be a queue of people arguing about who gets to actually push the button. Nobody would be having a problem with doing that. But no, he's so convinced that he is somehow a victim in this, in spite of what I'm telling you, that he's just moaning about how uncomfortable he was. I would say, let's just give him a brick futon and let's feed him chalk forever. That would be my suggestion. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying it's legal. I'm not saying there won't be some kind of human rights review. I'm just saying I would go for that. Just bricks to sleep on and sandpaper for your loo roll and a bucket for a toilet. And also, with respect, just chalk to eat for eternity. Now, clearly, the worst outcome has occurred. Maddie's body's been found and the community are absolutely blindsided. On the Friday evening of March the 1st, St. Cloud Community held a vigil for Madeline Soto, and the residents went ahead up and set up a memorial near the location where her body was found. That was on the Friday evening. And the memorial was beautiful. It had flowers, rosaries, stuffed animals, and loads of the locals were just expressing heartbreak. They were saying that they couldn't believe that she'd been murdered. They were saying they didn't necessarily know her, but they were all deeply affected by her loss. One of the residents said, "I don't even know the girl. I'm getting choked up. It's just so sad that it happened. She didn't deserve that." It's a guy called Jimmy Carpenter made that quote. They lived nearby where she lived. And then a woman called Vanessa Conception said, "I feel devastated. I felt like it was something so messed up that no one should ever go through that." Now, on the 2nd of March, Stearns was a no-show in court? Because clearly he's an utter coward. It's as simple as that. It does blow my mind still, and it happens in the UK as well, that these absolute predators, who are evidentially predators, they have information that clearly depicts them abusing a child that the police have, they can say, I'm not going to turn up. Should they not be dragged into court? You know, where are the human rights of the child who's been murdered? Where are the human rights of the child who's been molested for years? Why does this man get to not appear in court? I find...
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Remiss of any legal situation and service where the actual perpetrator does not have to stand in the full headlights of the law having to answer for their sins, but he doesn't go. So even though he was a no-show in court, a grand jury in Osceola County, Florida, indicted Stearns for first-degree murder in Maddie's death, along with all the separate charges I talked about earlier on. Then on Wednesday, March the 6th, the local church to Maddie hosted a service of hope and healing that was all about keeping her memory in everyone's minds and also recognizing that the loss of a child to the community is something that causes an absolute wound and it will take a long time for them to heal. And also there is something so beautiful about the fact that these strangers, on the whole, to Maddie, cared more about the man who was meant to protect her, the man who claimed to love her. I would say that none of the family actually went, and I guess that the wider family who loved Maddie were probably dealing with the pain and shock and trauma. But I find it really strange that Jen Soto didn't turn up to some of these things. Arguably, it's probably because people are blaming her for being part of the problem that led to her daughter's death. But that hope and healing community service was all about just trying to remind the community that when these things happen, the only way that you can act is to pull together as a group as opposed to divide. And the actual person holding the service, a guy called Pastor Jim Below, said, there are times where words just feel so inadequate. Sometimes our tears are all that we have. And that church was only 7 minutes away from where the middle school was that Maddie went to. So it's very local to them. Now, even though the family didn't actually go to that church service, apparently the wider family did give the church their blessing to host the memorial. But like I said, they weren't in attendance. Now, on March the 12th, a really positive change has occurred in Orange County. The public schools have announced that they're going to change the absence alert policy in the wake of Madeline going missing. They've actually said they're going to make changes to when and how it alerts parents when a student's absent from school. Superintendent Maria Vasquez revealed that they were going to make sure that parents now know in the morning that their child's missed school or they didn't show up to school. Because currently, the district only notifies parents via an automated phone call or text message after the student misses more than half of the school day. And then that's usually sent towards the end of the school day. Whereas now they're going to change that to make damn sure that you are aware if your child has not been a show up to school. And that's powerfully important because if you think about the first hour of somebody going missing, that can be powerful in bringing them home safe. After 4 hours, you've got way less chance of somebody coming home alive. And after 24 hours, well, you really are lucky if a person returns home at all in cases like this. Now, Kissimmee Police Chief Betty Holland has actually told the media that Stearns, who has, as I've said, been in jail since February the 28th, he has invoked his right to counsel. He hasn't cooperated at all with the investigation. And police said that they'd interviewed the teen's mother, Jennifer Soto. She had been fully cooperating with the investigation. And in fact, she said, everyone that was close to Madeline is considered a suspect until we have proven otherwise. And she said, no one is not cooperating other than Stearns. And we can't forget Tyler Wallace, Maddie Soto's biological father, The minute he found out that she was missing, he drove 14 hours, 14 hours to get involved with the search. And it's clear that he was somebody who wanted an active part in his daughter's life. He said that he was horrified by the fact that he'd been absolutely coerced by Stearns, because he said, I didn't really have any relationship with him, but he seemed like a warm, interested person. So he was somebody who he didn't have a fear of. And when he was asked about what he thought of Stearns, he said, I don't want to say that on camera. I can't communicate to you. Every father knows what I'm thinking right now. And what he's saying is, I want to kill him. Let's be honest. He's got the good grace not to say that in the mainstream news, but that's what he's thinking. And I think that every single one of you watching this right now will completely empathize with his feelings. Now, there have been emails between Stearns and his own mother since he has been arrested and incarcerated, and she's annoyed. She feels that he is somehow less responsible than he clearly is, and that arguably Jen Soto should be in the line of fire. She believes that she is complicit in it, she has a big part to play in it, and the reason that Maddie is dead is because of her actions, not his. I would say this sounds very much like a mother trying to minimize the actions of her son, and when we create narcissistic sociopaths, well, it's our responsibility to bring children up understanding consequences and not always being able to just get away with things, because I don't know, you're paying off friends who've got very questionable evidence against them. That's how we create narcissists. So even though I can understand a mother not wanting to believe that somebody is capable of this, it's clear that he did it. He's a child molester and predator and murderer. And her trying to pin the blame on Jen Soto equally is not going to wash with the investigators. Now, I'm not saying that she won't face charges. I don't know. It could be they're building a case around the information they've got about her and her actions. But as yet, she hasn't been charged. And there's a strong possibility that she won't be. Although, I do have to say, I would imagine that she should at least have some kind of negligence charges, because she allowed a grown-ass predator to share a bed with her daughter. She actually made them share a bed because she wanted to get a better night's sleep. And that's really deeply concerning to me. Also, there's just been some information released that shows that the very next morning after Maddie's disappearance, so this is around 3:18 a.m. in the morning, detectives actually say a different car, so a white Nissan, bear in mind that Jen Soto's car is a white Nissan, that left the apartment complex and took nearly the exact same route down Old Hickory Tree Drive after spending about half an hour in the area where Maddie's body was finally recovered. Like I said, she might not have been the driver, but they must be digging deep into those details to figure out exactly what happened. And I guess finally, the big question is why? Why would Stephen Stearns murder this girl that he'd been abusing for years? Why would he have been away from the family home that he'd shared with Jennifer and with Maddie for a period of years, and he'd then gone back to his parents, albeit that he says that he was helping them out because they're elderly and they've got 5 poodles. You know, we all know that's BS as well. But we know he's just a leech. He's the kind of person who takes financially, emotionally, sexually in this case as well. So he's not doing anybody any favours. But why had there been a period of time where he'd not stayed at Jennifer Soto's home? And yet then, on Maddie's 13th birthday, he goes across. On Maddie's 13th birthday, what does that symbolise for Stearns? Is it that coming of age? Is it the fact that now she genuinely, as I said earlier, is posing a threat? Is it because he's realising that he hasn't got long before she starts speaking out? Is it that silence he thought that he was buying? Is it that opportunity that he believed he'd created, where he'd coerced her into silence and the belief that he was her person? And that suddenly, even though she might have believed that at a time, it was starting to fall apart. Maybe she was saying those words to him. You can't do this anymore. I don't want you to do this anymore. Or was it after that 13th birthday party where she'd already felt abandoned, she'd already felt let down by her peers, and then he makes advances to her, he makes advances to this 13-year-old child, and finally she says no. Finally she says, I've had enough. Finally she says things are going to change, and that's why he kills her. Because he thinks that he's going to silence her permanently. And he's going to get away with it. In his mind, his delusional, absolutely victim-based mind, she's the problem now. He needs to create this solution. He's going to get away with it. And he fully believes that he can. and that's why he murders her. I don't know how she died. I'm going to imagine it was strangulation. That's my thoughts, but I can't 100% say that as a fact. It's just what I'm assuming played out. I suppose the only other reason that he might have murdered her is that he's been pushing the boundaries for a very long time, and that was a fantasy that he finally wanted to play out, and that's why he killed her. All of those are possibilities. I wait with bated breath and great interest to see how this finally plays out. I'll be following the court case. I will absolutely revisit this case. It is not finished. We're very much at the beginning, and I will be so interested to watch this as the courts play this out in real time. And hopefully this man will be in prison for the rest of his natural life, or may indeed be put to death. To be fair, I've never been pro the death penalty, but there are always exceptions, aren't there? Let me know your thoughts in the comments below. Take care, guys. And as ever, make sure you hold your children just that little bit tighter this evening before they go to sleep. Make sure that you remind them that you genuinely do love them with that authentic and transparent and good love. And know that that is why you are a good human being and a good parent, and why people like him would never deserve the title stepdad. He is nothing but a deviant predator, and I hope he burns in hell. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.